Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, February 19th, 2024. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Idaho House panel approves bill on school gender pronouns to take away minors' right to use preferred pronouns. And investigation into storage unit fire on Moscow Pullman Highway may take months. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. The Idaho House State Affairs Committee passed the bill Friday, taking away students' rights to be referred to by their preferred pronouns. House Bill 538, sponsored by Republican Ted Hill of Eagle, now heads to the House floor for a vote. House Bill 538 would bar K through 12 public school teachers from using a pronoun or name for an underage student that does not align with their birth sex, although a parent or guardian could consent to referring to their child by their preferred pronoun or name. The bill would also ban disciplining public employees, including school and college staff, if they refuse to use a pronoun that does not align with an individual's birth sex, and it would subject public employees, including school districts, colleges, and universities, to civil liability and potential uncapped damages if they compel an employee to use a pronoun that does not align with an individual's birth sex. Introducing House Bill 538 in committee Friday, Representative Ted Hill said, "Never in my wildest dreams would I have imagined having a teenager dictate my speech." Although compelled speech is part of nearly every job, from teacher to actor to fast food worker or store clerk, Hill maintains the U.S. Supreme Court has laid down an absolute prohibition on compelled speech. Hill also repeated the claim that a bill in the Michigan legislature would make it a felony to use the wrong pronoun, although the Idaho Press has reported the bill Representative Hill referenced does not contain the word pronoun, and it's an expansion of the state's hate crime law to include protections for gender identity and sexuality. Here's Representative Ted Hill in committee on Friday.
The United States Supreme Court clearly holds the compelled speech offends the United States Constitution and the First Amendment. Government players across this state and across the country have been inconsistent and not vigilant in defending citizens from compelled speech. As of recent, there's been significant pressure locally on teachers, government officials, and law officers about recognizing certain gender and gender pronouns, with fear of reprisal or even firing. This bill here protects people of Idaho with law that prohibits any government entity in the state from compelling any public employee to use preferred personal titles, greetings, or pronouns that do not correspond with the biological sex of the individual seeking such title or pronoun. Such protection is essential to ensure that the constitutional right to free speech of every person in the state is protected. This will not change the impact. Individuals can continue with their genders. They continue with their gender pronouns and their identities and titles, and that can be respected, acknowledged, but it will not be compelled or forced to recognize, and that's what this protection will do. Fundamentally, bottom line on this is all about First Amendment rights. Compelled speech from government that has any compelled speech is contrary to our First Amendment rights and contrary to the Constitution. Couple examples I want to talk about, and trying to get someone to come forward and testify. Teachers were fearful to come forward. They felt threatened. I call it an ideological inquisition, essentially, that's out there. They will not come forward and testify. They don't have legal protection, and every single teacher said, no, I'm not going to do that. They're not really sure where this pressure comes from. You talk to them, it says, the counselor says, you better do this, you better monitor, you better do what these kids say, you better follow these genders, or you'll be penalized, or you'll be fired. Then you try to find, where's that policy written? So there's this culture across, is where is it? I found one place in CUNA where it was actually documented, but it's this culture of fear and essentially a bullying culture that you must submit to this. And that's why this legislation will actually close this down. I'll read what one Cuny High teacher said. Never in my wildest dreams would I imagine having a teenager dictate my speech. It has gotten to the point that, as a teacher, we have to be so careful about what we say, as we're always in fear of losing our jobs if we say the wrong word. This fear is ideological. It's bullying in reverse. It's a bullying thing, especially across the teacher sphere. To show you how effective this is, the Michigan House passed a bill here last year that said using the wrong pronoun is a felony and a fine for $10,000. A felony and $10,000 fine for compelled speech contrary to the First Amendment. I was shocked. It did not go past the House, but I looked it up. Vehicular manslaughter in the same state is $10,000. So see how this perspective, this inquisition, how out of touch this is.
That was Republican Representative Ted Hill of Eagle presenting House Bill 538 Friday in the House State Affairs Committee. The Idaho Press reported there's no such bill in the Michigan legislature and said the bill Representative Hill referenced does not contain the word pronoun, as it's an expansion of the state's hate crime law to include protections for gender identity and sexuality. Hill also implied his bill would aid in police work, although it does not limit what people can say to a police officer.
I heard a police officer was having this, or trying to investigate. And they're saying they did this and they did this. They who, what, when, a couple people? No, this they, this guy, this they, this. It's confusing. It was confusing from the police officer's perspective, and from the law, I can see absolutely chaos. So you have to actually, you're going to have some flowchart to say, okay, they is this guy, and what we're going to do. It's going to be very challenging. I don't have any data, but I did get the anecdotal response from police officers and so forth that the confusion is definitely there.
When introducing the bill February 9th, Hill said he would bring 20 teachers to testify in committee in favor of the bill. During Friday's hearing, two teachers spoke in favor. They were Boise school teacher Heidi Hill, who is Ted Hill's wife, and West Ada School District substitute teacher Steve Bender. Democratic Representative John Gannon of Boise questioned Hill about his bill on Friday.
I'm just wondering if the bill does create some problems when it mandates, for example, on line 22-23, shall that a employee shall not be subject.
What page, Representative?
Let's see, where is it? Page 2. When we say, when the bill says, well, you have to use the correct, you can't use a pronoun that's inconsistent with a person's sex, but supposing it's not clear on, as to the sex of the person. What happens there if there's some ambiguity as to, dress and whatnot? I mean, we're looking at lawsuits, and so what happened? How do you figure out the person's sex so that you're doing the right thing?
Representative Hill.
Well, I would say at this point, since it's not a matter of the confusion, it's just if I make a mistake, I will not be held responsible. So if there is a confusion, I can't tell what this is, and I use the wrong pronoun, sorry, correct me. But in this case, the fundamental issue here is just nothing is compulsory, required, or punished by anything I say. So if I get it wrong, it's confusing. That's the whole society. I think we talked about all these pronouns. And it's going to be challenging to figure this out. We're going to have to wear name tags, I'm thinking, to know what's going on. But I don't think that's going to be a problem. It's just clearly, this is compulsory language only. That's the limitation.
Here's some of the testimony on the bill Friday in the House State Affairs Committee.
My name is Misty Deli Carpini-Tolman, and I am the State Director for Planned Parenthood Alliance Advocates Idaho. We strongly oppose House Bill 538, a bill that deeply disrespects and harms the LGBTQ community by encouraging school and government employees to flagrantly ignore people's pronouns and names. This bill is not about free speech, but allows blatant discrimination against the LGBTQ community in our schools and our government offices. This bill poses significant risks to the well-being and safety of transgender and gender nonconforming students and employees. By allowing government employees and public school staff and students to refuse to use a person's preferred pronouns or name, the bill creates a hostile, an unwelcoming environment for transgender people. In the school context, this bill could also forcibly out a student, since this language requires express parental permission for schools to respect a student's identity. HB 538 sends a message that trans students' identities are not valid or worthy of respect, which can contribute to increased rates of bullying, harassment, and mental health issues among transgender students. Although we believe in preserving free speech rights, the language of the bill misinterprets what constitutes compelled speech. Compelled speech typically refers to instances where the government is forcing individuals to express a political message or viewpoint that they disagree with. Asking a person to respect another's preferred pronoun or name is not about endorsing a particular viewpoint, but rather about respecting another individual's identity and affirming their dignity as a human being. In the same way schools and employers can prohibit words and actions that would constitute bullying or harassment, our public institutions should be allowed to pass policies that prohibit discrimination and instead promote respect and dignity. To the LGBT community, I want to publicly say that I'm sorry that they're enduring turning free speech into an argument that rejects their identity and right to exist. This legislative body should instead be promoting respect and dignity for all Idahoans, including our LGBTQ community. As such, I strongly urge you to oppose House Bill 538.
Thank you, Misty. Are there questions? Representative Skog.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for coming forward and testifying. I see this as a practical matter. We had examples in my own community of police doing an investigation. When the driver wants to be called they, them, how to write that report. It's and I just see this promoting chaos if we don't get this they, them, thou, whatever, under control. Do you have a response on how that police officer should handle a they, them, and some multiple occupants of a vehicle who want to be called different things?
Misty?
Chairman Crane, Representative Skog, my first thought is that we actually use they, them in the singular all the time. In our language, if you think of ordering a pizza and you're like, did you order the pizza? When's the delivery person getting here? What should we tip them? You don't know. You don't think that I'm talking about multiple people in that instance. And I think that our police forces, our courts can come up with policies that don't discriminate. It feels like you've got this knot. And instead of trying to untangle the knot and figure out a way to handle this, you're just throwing more string into that knot with legislation like this.
Further questions? Representative Gannon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I note that that the statistics are that suicide is a higher is higher for trans kids, and I'm wondering, are there any studies that would be pertinent to show, to give us an idea of how a bill like this and treating trans people the way as this bill proposes would affect trans people, do you think?
Misty?
Chairman Crane, Representative Gannon, there are studies. I don't have them on me, but I can absolutely get them to you all quickly. I can have people on it right now. Thank you for that question. And it's true. Like, it will lead to more mental health and harassment and bullying and discrimination against our trans community.
Follow up? Okay. Any other questions? Misty, I have a couple of questions for you. I might be able to do it in one. But so what is the purpose? This is fairly new. What is the purpose? Why are we using pronouns now to identify ourselves? Can you help me understand that?
Chairman Crane, I would ask, I guess, why do you use the pronouns that you use? I mean, we all have a very deep sense of who we are and who we identify as, and I'm not asking you to identify as anybody other than who you are, but I am saying that we can't put that on somebody else, and they should have the right and the freedom of expression to be able to self-identify the same way that you do.
So I typically identify as Brent, and people want to call me Representative Crane. I go, now, I'm not into titles because it can be taken away, but my name, that's how I identify. So I'm trying to understand, and I'm truly at a loss as to where this shift happened in culture that people need to feel like that they have to have a pronoun to identify themselves. So that's fine. What the, if you can help, I can understand, I logically could understand the he, him, she, her, they, them. Can you help me understand why it shifts from he, him, she, her to they, them?
Chairman Crane, I wouldn't say that it shifts from that. I would just say that there are people who, the same way that you feel very deeply that you identify as Brent, I identify as she, her. That feels very true to myself. And there are people who don't feel like they identify as either. And they, them feels more comfortable for them. They feel that it's truer for them. And again, nobody's asking anybody else to identify in a way that doesn't make sense to you. It's just not putting it on other people.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it. I've got Representative Scott and then Representative Skog.
Oh, sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Misty, can you tell me how many pronouns there are in the pronoun world?
Misty, if you've got an answer for that.
Chairman Crane, Representative Scott, I cannot. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Follow up, repeat. Okay. Yeah, Representative Skog.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And we have, ma'am, we have different world views. I think that's safe to say. And I can be respectful of yours. But I'm having a hard time when somebody comes to me, if a man born as a man wants to be called by a woman's name, I'll do that. But I will not call him a woman because it's not the truth. Help me deal with that.
Misty?
Chairman Crane, Representative Skog, I, again, go back to this idea that everybody has the right and the freedom of expression to self-identify. And if that is how somebody self-identifies, I think it's a very small thing. I mean, all the time, routinely, we change our language and our behavior to show courtesy. And I think it's a very small thing to show that courtesy.
My name is Robin Olson, and I represent myself. Madam Chair and Committee, the government is best which governs the least, for its people govern themselves. The trudge against the willing hands of Washington is a proud demarcator of the Republican Party and the great Idaho legislature. Limited government and liberty for all. This is what I believe this bill is focused on here today, but I fear this may have overreached the boundary. 303 Creative, excerpted at the start of this bill, has been stretched to elastic proportions under this bill. Let's take a read of 303 Creative, shall we? Page 16. Does anyone think a speechwriter loses his First Amendment right to choose for whom he works if he accepts money in return, or that a visual artist who accepts commissions from the public does the same? Page 12. Countless other creative professionals, too, could be forced to choose. Even the name 303 Creative, do we understand who is protected from compelling speech? Creative and artistic enterprises, not public schools and not public accommodations. In fact, the conservative majority all agreed, with no concurring opinion, that this court has recognized that governments in this country have a compelling interest in eliminating discrimination in places of public accommodation. This court has recognized, too, that public accommodation laws vindicate the deprivation of personal dignity that surely accompanies denials of equal access to public establishments. A school is not the same place as an artistic business. Expression from a place of personal artistry and individuality is discrete from expression in a schoolhouse, especially pertaining to one's peers and mentees. There's no tangible result from the expressions limited in this bill. 303 Creative cannot control in this case. It must be distinguished. This is a dangerous overreach of governmental power that will have dangerous consequences for what we say, how we act, and what we think, transforming our free democracy into an Orwellian autocracy. I ask you to vote in opposition to this bill. I'm also welcome to answer any questions about the Michigan bill, stated before, archaic pronouns and pronoun usage, describe oneself as a god or as governor.
Robin, your time
I'm
is up.
I'm going to entertain any questions presented.
Thank you for your testimony today. It looks like we do have a question. Representative Crane.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Robin, so you referenced my question that I had earlier. What would prevent a student from wanting to identify as the teacher or identify as a principal?
Robin.
I think that's a great question, and thank you for asking, Chairman Crane. I think the difference here is that gender is a suspect class, while an occupation is something much more discreet. It is something that is much more meritocratic, I think you would agree. I'm sure you had to run and elect for your campaign for your occupation, and I am very excited that you got to this point in your life. But when it comes to specifically gender, specifically pronouns, specifically lived names, that is something that falls within the protection of suspect classifications under the ADA, under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act. Along other sorts of these kinds of mainframes are something like race, national origin, color, religion, and as of Woolstock in sometime in 2021, that includes sexual orientation and gender identity as well. So that's what I would say to that. A god would not be an occupation, of course, but a god and a governorship or a teachership would be much different than a personal gender identity. Does that answer your question?
Representative Crane.
Maybe to clarify, what I'm stuck with, Robin, is how you can identify according to your gender however you want to. But when it comes to a profession, you can't. Why would you limit one's ability to identify as whatever they want in a profession?
Robin?
I think that's a great question. Again, I think it circled back to our meritocratic values of the United States. You know, we have to have credentials to be good at what we do. We have to have that experience to do what we do. For example, let's take teachers. You know, teachers, I know, have to spend a certain amount of hours in a classroom teaching students. This is something different from a gender identity that doesn't necessarily have those credentials in place. In my mind, I see that occupation of someone saying that they can be whatever they want to be different from someone expressing their own gender identity. I think another part of it, too, is authenticity. I started my speech today with a quote from Henry David Thoreau, who is very famous on his speech for civil disobedience. It is about limited government and is about autonomy of the individual, which I'm sure are values that we all want to share and agree with as Americans and as Idahoans. One part that he specifically goes into is responsibility of the individual and authenticity. If someone were to say that they were a teacher, in this case, if a student were to say that you were a teacher, or if, let's say, a representative on this committee were to say they were governor, I would believe that this would be inauthentic to those experiences, especially because we know and have public records of these credentials and how we measure who gets these positions. For governorship, for example, it's the votes. We can see the votes clearly in public records, at least in terms of tallies and numbers. When it comes to gender identity, these people are being authentic to themselves and expressing themselves in a way that are not trying to trick other people, that aren't trying to deceive other people, that aren't trying to lie to other people, and are trying to be authentic to themselves.
And that was some of the testimony Friday on House Bill 538, which would take away students' rights to be referred to by their preferred pronoun. The House State Affairs Committee passed the bill, and it now heads to the House floor. And you're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored by listeners like you and by Skyglow Solar, offering solar power systems installations on the Palouse and surrounding region. Information at skyglowsolar.com or contact Brian Ogle at 208-310-4545.
The Idaho Senate State Affairs Committee voted unanimously Friday in favor of Secretary of State Phil McGrane's bill to create a statewide voter guide containing candidate information. So far, official voter pamphlets in Idaho have only included information on ballot proposals. McGrane said his plan is for candidates for federal, state, and county offices to submit 200-word statements for publication, along with a photo of the candidate that's less than 4 years old. According to the Idaho Press, the Republican McGrane said the voter guide would cost $350,000 per year. The current voter guide with only ballot measures costs the state $350,000 every other year. The bill now heads to the Senate floor. Pullman Fire Marshal Darren Jones says the investigation into the fire that destroyed almost all the units at express storage on the east side of Pullman will be complicated and could take several months. Jones said investigators do know which unit the fire started in. The Daily News reports the fire February 8th destroyed almost all of the storage units and hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of items. Those include many vehicles, a motorhome, and a boat. Jones said because dozens of people lost items in the fire, several insurance companies are interested in the investigation. He said so far there's no indication that the fire was suspicious and the fire was probably accidental. Assotin County Public Health has placed two portable toilets in Foster Park in Clarkston after the city ordered a tent encampment near Walmart disbanded and some of the 75 people living there moved to Foster Park, which is the only place the city is allowing camping. Assotin County Public Health Director Brady Woodbury told the Lewiston Tribune the city of Clarkston has declined to supply portable toilets at encampments for liability reasons. Woodbury said, "We didn't want to have the same thing happen at Foster Park as happened over at the encampment and have human waste in buckets and things like that." He said the health department signed an agreement with the city to assume liability for anything associated with the portable toilets. Woodbury said the toilets will remain in the park until April and will be pumped and serviced once a week. Foster Park does have public restrooms, but they are closed for the winter due to a lack of heat. Woodbury said state emergency preparedness funds are paying the $500 cost of the portable toilets.
A bill in Olympia aims to protect Washingtonians against restricted health care access and rising costs from hospital mergers. Consolidation in the healthcare market has become a growing concern for some in Washington state. A 2022 Office of Financial Management report found the number of hospitals that are part of larger systems grew from 10% in 1986 to nearly 50% in 2017. Sam Hatzenbieler with the Economic Opportunity Institute says this has been bad news for Washingtonians, which is why Senate Bill 5241 is needed.
The bill would give the Attorney General oversight over potential mergers and acquisitions and would give them the power to stop them or place conditions on these mergers if they would be shown to reduce access to care or increase costs for patients.
Organizations, including the Washington State Hospital Association and Washington State Medical Association, have testified against the bill, saying it could tie the hands of hospitals that are struggling financially to survive. The measure has passed in the Senate and is scheduled for an executive session in the House Committee on Civil Rights and Judiciary on Tuesday. Washingtonians have a legal right to access abortion. However, some in the state have seen access restricted in hospital mergers, especially in rural parts of the state where there may be only one option. Courtney Norman, the Washington State Director for Planned Parenthood Alliance Advocates, says sometimes the larger entity in an acquisition is a corporation that doesn't offer abortion services.
So you may have a community that previously was receiving access to birth control, abortion care, cancer screenings, and more, and then suddenly that's being taken away because of a consolidation.
Norman says the legislation is critical for Washingtonians.
We're talking about many times life and death issues, and in the interest of preserving access to health care for all, we should not just put the ease of corporations that don't want to have to deal with some paperwork over the needs of our patients and our communities, especially in the rural parts of Washington.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
A coalition of advocacy groups have helped defeat a bill in the Idaho legislature that would have given the pesticide industry blanket immunity from liability lawsuits. The pesticide immunity bill was defeated 15-9 Friday by the Republican-controlled state Senate. The coalition was led by the Idaho Conservation League and included the Northwest Center for Alternatives to Pesticides, the Idaho Trial Lawyers Association, and the Idaho Association of Resource Councils. Jonathan Oppenheimer with the Conservation League says the motivation for them was consumer protection.
We're not coming at this from a perspective of pesticides shouldn't be used. We're coming at this from a perspective of there should be justice for those who may be harmed by using products if they are not warned about those potential health consequences.
Oppenheimer says the Senate's five Democrats joined with a group of right-wing Republicans to defeat the Idaho bill. He says the pesticide industry is pushing similar bills in several other states, including Missouri, Iowa and Florida. Liability lawsuit immunity is controversial. Businesses say it keeps them from getting hit with multi-million-dollar settlements, while consumer advocates say it closes the courthouse door. Oppenheimer says pesticide users who get sick would have little recourse.
The pesticide industry is seeking broad immunity that would shield them from failure to warn claims. As long as that label is approved by EPA and that the pesticide is approved for use in the United States, they would be immune from any liability.
Only a few major industries have either federal or state immunity from lawsuits. The best known are firearm manufacturers and the computer technology sector. In addition, most federal, state, and local governments are immune from the results of performing their statutory duties. Or Idaho News Service, I'm Mark Richardson.
Two bills passed in the Idaho House and Welfare Committee today impacting child vaccination processes at schools. Idaho already has one of the lowest immunization rates in the country and one of the highest rates of immunization opt-outs for school-aged children. Idaho already allows parents to opt their children out of vaccinations that state law says are mandatory. One of the bills from Republican Representative Dori Healy of Boise would require schools to inform parents they can opt out of immunizations for religious reasons or for any reason. The other bill would clarify that 18-year-olds still in high school can opt out of immunizations themselves without parental permission. The bills passed in committee today along party lines and now head to the House floor. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area, there's a 40% chance of showers tonight, otherwise mostly cloudy, low 36. Tomorrow, 30% chance of showers afternoon, snow level 4,800 feet, mostly cloudy, high 46. And Tuesday night, we're looking at a 20% chance of showers after 10 p.m., patchy fog before midnight, snow level 4,700 feet, otherwise mostly cloudy, low 34, and a 40% chance of showers Wednesday, mainly after 10 p.m., snow level 4,300 feet, otherwise mostly cloudy, high 48, and the current temperature, 39. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, and the public affairs and programming that you hear, also the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business supports community radio. You can also adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button. And once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a good night. Flashpoints is up next, followed by music beginning in earnest at 7:30 with Zach Dunoir in to play music for you. And at 9 o'clock, Chia Pet will play music 9 to 11. And at 11 o'clock, we have syndicated world music till 1 a.m. with the Motherland Influence. So stay tuned. KRFP Moscow Pullman.